Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to be a part of this series of meetings this week. And it is a delight to be here at this time of year. I love the fall. It's my favorite season. I love the crispness in the air. I love the beauty of the leaves as they change. It seems like the sky is bluer in the fall than at any other season. And I like the reminder that change can be a good thing. Especially when God's hand is what brings the change. I hope that this week can be a time for good change for all of us, because the Lord is involved in our life and in our heart, and we've been impacted by His Word in a way that brings about stronger resolution, greater faith, bigger commitments. And so I hope the week can be productive together as we study together in His Word. It's a thrill to have a little bit of a reunion this week. Jennifer and I have loved Wally and Sandy for a number of years now. We first got introduced to them when they came to Southside in Houston, Texas, when we were living and preaching there. And so we fell in love with them that weekend. They came to help us out in doing a wonderful series of meetings. And Kurt Paquette and I are old friends. We went to school together in Florida several years ago. And Mike Bozeman was my roommate when we were together at Florida College. So anything you want to know about Mike, don't ask me, because I don't want him to tell anything on me, so I'm not telling anything on him. But I have loved Mike for a long time. He's a good friend and a great man. And I'm so thrilled that he's here working with you, and thrilled to have time to spend with him together this week. And to get acquainted with you is a delight, too. And we're looking forward so much to our time together this week and our time before God together this week. I want to invite you to turn to Genesis chapter 1, please. Genesis chapter 1. And I'd like to read this account together. It is a familiar account to you, but I hope you'll listen very carefully to what Moses recorded here for us by inspiration about how it all began, about how it all originated from the hand of God. Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse, and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, a second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters He called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth sprout forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit after their kind, with seed in them and on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for seasons, and for signs, and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens, to give light on the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. And God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens. And God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarmed after their kind and every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning a fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Then God said, "Behold, I've given every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed, it shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth which has life, I've given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw all that He had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts. And by the seventh day God completed His work which He had done, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it He had rested from all His work which God had created and made. The Genesis account was as remarkable, if not even more so, to the people who first heard it in Moses' day than it is even to the ears of people who hear the Genesis account today. There was another account of origins in the day of Moses that even preceded Moses about how the world began. And I expect to those people that followed Moses out of Egypt, where there were other gods worshipped, and where there were other pagan deities that men bowed down to, as Moses led those people across the Red Sea and as they went into the wilderness and camped at Sinai, maybe to some of them, the story of how it all began was new. Maybe it wasn't. Perhaps the tradition and the story of how it really began had been passed down from father to father to father, generations, all the way down to Moses' time. But inasmuch as there was much idolatry among the Israelites, there were other competing theories about how it all began that would have existed in the day of Moses, and even in the day of Abraham, and even before that. So that the story, the account that was penned by Moses, by inspiration, as God revealed to him the first week of the universe, would have been something that would have been very startling, and would have been something that would have competed with and run in the face of what the scientists and what the elite and the masses believed in the day in which Moses first penned these words. In fact, the popular account of how the world began, dating from Abraham's day, said that there was this great cosmic battle between the gods. You see, it was a belief system that believed in a multiplicity of gods rather than in the one true God, the living God. And so there was this cosmic battle between the gods, this myth said. And this young god named Marduk killed another goddess. She was the goddess of the ocean named Tiamat. And Marduk divided her corpse, and from half of her corpse he made the sky, and from half of it he made the earth. And from the blood of her co-conspirator he created mankind then. And the reason he made mankind was to be the slaves of the gods, so that the deities could be free from work. This myth spoke of a legion of gods who created the world by accident, They didn't mean to. It just happened as a result of this conflict. And then created mankind for their own selfish sport and leisure. But I want you to see that the biblical account that Moses recorded that came from the mind and hand of God was something very different. It said that the creation of heaven and earth was the deliberate act of one God. God created the world on purpose. And He is the only true God. And He made the heavens and the earth as a fit habitation for man, whom He purposely created in His image for divine fellowship, to have a relationship, a trust relationship with this God who had created everything. There are actually two accounts of creation, the one found in Genesis 1 that we've read, and then there is a second account of creation found in Genesis chapter 2. They are complementary accounts, but they have a different focus. What we have in Genesis chapter 1 is the chronology of creation. God describes in sequence what He did in that first week. And that first week becomes the pattern for every other week. We count time by weeks because of what God did in that first week when He created the heavens and the earth. And so we read of the chronology of creation. What we find in Genesis chapter 2 is the narrative of creation. In the first story, in the first account of the chronology, man is the climax. He is the final product of God's creative activity and the crowning achievement in what God has done. In the narrative account of creation in Genesis chapter 2, man is the center. In that story or that telling of the creation account, God plants a garden that He makes just for man and places man in the center of it. And so man is the climax or the crown in the first account, and he is in the narrative of creation. Man is the center. But the focus of all of that is to show us the kind of relationship that God wants with man. It's the reason why man is the crowning act. It's the reason why man is the centerpiece in the garden that God plants in Genesis chapter 2. I want you to see, as we've read Genesis chapter 1, that there's kind of a poetry to this reading. There's a lot of repetition. There's a kind of a cadence to the reading of the account. And I glean from that this story of how the world began, of how the universe began, is intended to be read and reflected upon. For a man to stop and think about, and for the Jews that were coming out of Egypt and that were wandering in the wilderness and were camping at Sinai and were going on to the promised land that God, a new garden land that God had planted just for them, this was intended for them to really think about this God who had called them and who had redeemed them from captivity. It was meant for them to reflect on their relationship with Him. And I think it's intended for us to read and reflect upon this story in the same way. There are these striking themes that are here, striking patterns that teach us some fundamental principles about man and his relationship with his Creator. And I want us to consider a few of those together in our study this morning. First thing I want you to see is that when you look at this week, there is a real symmetry and a real practicality and order to what God has done as He spends the first 3 days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, kind of mapping out this backdrop for the human drama. He creates these three habitations on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Then He comes back on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and He fills in the habitations. He goes back to the very first one that He made, and he fills it up with all of these posts that are compatible with that habitation. He does the same thing on Monday, and He comes back, and on Tuesday, or He comes back to what He did on Tuesday, and when He caused the dry land to appear and caused vegetation to grow, and on Friday, on the third sequence of the second sequence of 3 days, He fills in that habitation too. So He creates these habitations the first 3 days, and then He creates the host that occupy those habitations on the second 3 days. So, on Sunday, God created light. He created light. That was the work of one day. God created light. Then, on Wednesday, when he comes back to the realm of light, He makes all the light theirs. And so He makes the sun and the moon and the stars, everything that gives forth light, all are made to occupy that realm on that day. On Monday, God separated the waters below from the waters above. He made heaven. He made this expanse. And so there's a place above where the water is stored that comes down in rain and snow and our weather. And then there are the waters below where that envelop the earth. And so God made the heaven, this expanse that separates the waters above from the waters below. That was the work of Monday. That was the work of the second day. Then, 3 days later, on Thursday, God comes and He fills those realms. And so He makes everything that has wings and everything that has fins. Everything that swims in the seas, God made that swarms the seas, the text reads. God made on Thursday. And everything that soars in the skies, God made on Thursday. So everything that has wings and everything that has fins, God made on Thursday to occupy that habitation of air and water. On Tuesday, God caused the waters below to be separated so that there was dry land that appeared. And so the dry land appeared, and then God planted vegetation. He made all the trees. He made all the grass. He made everything that is all the domesticated kinds of fruits and vegetables and all of that sort of thing that would be food for every land animal. And so all of that was done on Tuesday. And then on Friday, God made all of the beasts of the earth, everything that walks on, that needs dry land. All of that was made on Friday to occupy this territory. And then, the crowning act, God made man on Friday to live on the dry land and to rule over everything else that God had created. And then on Saturday, on the seventh day, God rested. The thing I want you to see is that God doesn't care about the science. He doesn't care about what man thinks it has to be like or ought to be like or whatever. And not to say that God has not given order and laws and logic to what He has done. No, very much so, and that's what we see here in this first week. But God has approached this with a beauty as well as with an order. And so there is rationale and there is symmetry to all that God has done. There is order and there is logic. What fell in his workshop doesn't go first and turn on the lights before it all begins? And so God has done things in a very logical way as He's made these different habitations, these different realms, and then He has made the occupants of these different realms so that when He gets to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, all and all their hosts," you see. He made these habitations, the heavens and the earth, and then He made their host that occupy the heavens and the earth. The thing I want you to see in that is that God gave everything a place and He gave everything a time. Isn't that wonderful? Everything that God had made, God gave a place and He gave a time to it. It was all purposeful. It was all deliberate. He knew when He started on Sunday what He was going to do on Friday. He knew when He made what He made on Sunday with making the realm of light, that He was going to make those luminaries that occupy the realm of light, and that when He caused the expanse to appear, the heavens that distinguished the waters above from the waters below, He knew that He would fill that with winged creatures and with finned creatures. And that when He caused the dry land to appear and the vegetation to grow, that He was making the perfect place for man. All of this was deliberate. All of it was purposeful. God gave everything a place and a time. And God created everything at the right place and at the right time. He knew what He was doing, knows what He's doing. Creation is deliberate, thoughtful. It's not chaotic and haphazard, like the common myths of Moses' day said. It was not accidental. God knew exactly what He was doing. And the comfort for Israel and the comfort for us is this. If that's the way the first week was, that's the way that every week is, which says to me that there is still a logic and there is still a symmetry to the march of time, and that each one of us has a place in it. Isn't that wonderful to consider? that there is still a logic and a symmetry to what goes on in our world. Sometimes it may seem chaotic. Sometimes it may seem haphazard. Sometimes it may seem as if we don't know where things are headed or what's going on in our world, but God is still in charge. He's still in control. And so there is still symmetry. There is still order. There's still logic to the march of time. And God created us just as purposefully as He created the first man and the first woman who were in His image, who drew breath, and who were in awe of His creation the way that we are this time of year. And we get that confidence when we read this first chapter. Another pattern in Genesis chapter 1 is the refrain that reads over and over again about the quality of what God made. Nearly every day, not every day, but nearly every day ends with the refrain, "And it was good." And it was good. There's quality in God's creation and its host. Every day, in fact, is described as being good. Sunday, it says that God created the light. Verse 3 says, God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. That kind of refrain is found every day but Monday. Some folks would still say that Monday's not a good day. And there'd be some good Bible for that, because God didn't call it a good day. But what's interesting is that while He didn't say that Monday was good, on Tuesday He comes back and He says it twice. Once He caused the dry land to appear, it was good. And when He causes the vegetation to grow, He says that it was good. And then on Friday, when He makes the animal creation that occupy the land and that eat the vegetation, He says it after He creates the animals, and then He says it after He creates man, and He adds, when He says after the creation of man, that it was not only good, it was very good when it's all complete. That suggests to me that statement, "it was good," and "it was very good," doesn't just apply to the material quality of what God has made. What I mean by that, it's not that God... that, you know, the fish didn't swim crooked, that it had it was all balanced, and that the bird had what it needed so that it could fly. The Lord didn't have to throw anything away and start over again because it didn't come out the way that He intended to. We would know that the material quality of what God has made was good, and it was very good when God had completed. There's something more to what Genesis 1 means when God says that something was good. But I want you to think about what you mean when you say that a day is good. What do you mean by that? When someone says, "How are you today?" and you say it's a good day. What do you mean by that? I tell you what I typically mean by that is that it was good for me. Everybody was nice to me today. Or if they weren't nice to me, it didn't hurt me some way. The weather was what I wanted the weather to be. Nobody pulled out in front of me or nearly hit me. The traffic was light. A lot of times when we talk about it being a good day, we mean that it was something that was good for us. Now, what does the Lord mean when He says that it's a good day? Well, I suggest to you that what it means when it says that the day was good, and when it says that it altogether was very good, was that it was good for us. You see, the reason why Monday, it seems to me at least, why Monday was not described as a good day, is that while there was light for man, with the separating of the waters above and the waters below, when it was just all water and air, there was no place for man. There was no place for man to live, and there was nothing for man to eat. But on Tuesday, here's a really good day. Because now there's a place for man to live, so that was good. And now there's something for man to eat, and so that is good. And when all is done and man is created, then it is very good. And I suggest to you that what made it good was that it fit God's purpose for man. Which says something to Israel, and it says something to us about what God's intention is in creation. This was all about what was good for man, for man to have a relationship, a meaningful relationship with God. That's where all of this is headed. And it's something that is so radically different from what people in Moses' culture and in Egypt and in Babylon and in other civilizations in that time, something drastically different, radically different from what they were hearing, that men were created to be the slaves of God, that men were created and only because the gods were lazy. This is a picture of creation that says that no, God has created man not as an afterthought. God created man on purpose, and He fashioned everything that He fashioned around man with man's needs in mind so that man would learn to trust in his Creator. He would see that here's a God who wants to provide everything that we need. And that is reinforced by what we read in Genesis chapter 2, when God plants the garden and when He puts man in the middle of it, and where there is everything that man needs for life, and everything that man needs to be satisfied, and everything that man needs to have a trust relationship with God. So what made it good is God's perfect provisions for man. The quality of creation was stated in terms of how it related to the needs of man. And there is a lesson for me and for you in that. Not just about what's a good day for God, that it is a day that is filled with thoughts about and provisions for the needs of man. But what ought to be a good day for me? You know what makes a really good day for people created in the image of God? It's when our thoughts are filled with deeds and actions for others. And that's what makes it. You see, you have the capability to make every day a good day, not because the day is about you, and not because the day is about me, but because the day is about others. That I use my intellect and I use my strength and my power the same way that the Creator did to make this a better habitation for others. And we have the power to do that. That's what made it good for God. And that's what can make a day really good for us. I want you to see in the account of creation that there is this another pattern. God likes to do things in threes. There's just there's a uniformity to that in the story of creation. There are these three habitations: the light, and then the waters in the sky, and then there is the land that God makes. And so there are these three habitations, and there are these three categories of hosts: those that occupy the realm of light, those that occupy the sky and sea, those that occupy the land. And that's just the first. There are all kinds of patterns of three that are found all throughout the text here, and typically in some kind of progressive movement. Now, that's very instructive for Israel. It's interesting that in Egypt they worshiped things like the sun, the moon, and the stars, and that was common in so many cultures, and you can see why people would think, well, the heavenly bodies are so awesome, they're so orderly, they're so above man, they're so way out there. And so there's something that is impressive and that is awe-inspiring about those products of God's creative activity. But I want you to see, in terms of what God did in His creative activity, they're way down the scale. I mean, what you think would be the greatest is the least. God made the light bearers first. Then He made things that have life. He made then the fish, and He made the birds. And while they are awesome because they are so different from man, because they can do things that man only dreams of doing, like living underwater or soaring through the skies, they too are way down the scale. And even the animal creation that was made before man, it's impressive. And there are all kinds of beasts that are wild and that are strong and domesticated animals, but it is man that God made last, you see. Everything's progressive. It's all coming to the creation of man, and He is over everything else, and not just the beast of the earth, and not just the fish of the sea. He's over everything. So that the sun and the moon and the stars were not made for man to bow down and to worship them, or to make oaths to them, or to believe that somehow they are superstitiously in control of our lives in some kind of cosmic, zoological, or zodiacal sort of system. But that instead, you see, they are servants to man. So that they're given so that we can see. And they're given so that we know direction. And they're given so that they are, we can count time, we can number our days. And so the description of why God makes the light bearers is so that they could be servants of man. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights to give light on the earth. Now who's that for? It's for man. And so even the greatest things were meant to be the servants of man. And so all of this is done in threes and all of this progressive kind of way to teach some great lessons for man. There are three purposes for the light: to separate day and night, for signs and seasons and days and years, to give light on the earth. There are three charges to man: be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over, he says. Vegetation is described from the ground up. It's the grass and then the crops and the trees. And the luminaries of the sky from the greater to the lesser, the sun and the moon and the stars. But the climax of all of this movement is the making of man, the making of a place for man and the creation of man itself. There is harmony and there is progress in the arrangements of God. There is not only beauty and completeness in what God has done, there's utility in what God has made. And one of the progressive movement things that I learned from this text is that time and history have a destination. Things are going somewhere. And the fact that God makes man says that man is going somewhere. That God has purpose in mind in time. And so this first week is the beginning of many weeks, but it is all going somewhere. Time and history have a destination, and God has made perfect provisions to reach that destination. We know from the rest of the biblical story that time and history do have a destination, that it all ends with man and God, that it all climaxes with man before God, that God has in mind a time and a place where He and man will dwell together in eternity, where there will be uninhibited fellowship, where it will be unrestricted, where it will not be veiled, but where we will see Him face to face, Revelation 22 says. And so this world is going somewhere. History is going somewhere. And it behooves me to figure out where I am in that movement. Is my destiny, is my destination, is my course that I'm set on, is it the course that God has in mind for me? Is it a course that ends at His throne, that ends with me at His throne, and in a relationship with Him? That was a great lesson for Israel, who needed to see that their history was going somewhere. God had a plan for them as a people, and had a plan for them as individuals. And I need to see that in my life too. Another repetition in Genesis chapter 1 that is so instructive was the refrain that speaks of how the day began and how the day ended. Look at how it says, every day starts with, "And God said," verse 6. God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters." Verse 9, God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered together into one place." Verse 14, God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens." Verse 20, God said, "Let the waters teem." Verse 24, "Let the earth bring forth." God said, God said, God said. And look at how the day ends. Verse 7, after God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters," it says that the waters were separated, and it was so. The end of verse 7. And it was so. It says, after God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered together into one place," verse 9, it says, "And it was so." God said, and it was so. God speaks, and it happens. Once on Sunday, once on Monday, twice on Tuesday, He speaks and it's so. Once on Wednesday, once on Thursday, three times on Friday, God says and it happens. And that's a great lesson for Israel and a great lesson for us concerning the power and the authority of God. When God says something, when God makes a promise, when God makes a declaration, when God says that something will be, it happens. Every time. When God speaks, it is so. When God commands, it occurs. There's a great message here about the power of God and the authority of God and the fact that man can trust in His authority and can trust in his power. And there is again a lesson, a practical lesson, about how we conduct our day, how we conduct our week and all of that. If that is so for the creating of the heavens and the earth, that when God speaks, it happens, when God says that it's so, wouldn't it be a great thing if that's the way my day was? So that every day began with, what's God say today? What's He say for me and my family? What does He say for me and my influence? What has God said for me and my work and how I ought to do that? What's He said about me and my neighbor, me and my brethren, me and my wife? Every day ought to begin with, and God said for me as a believer. And wouldn't it be good if every day ended with, and it was so? That I start my day with, what does God want me to do today? And my day ends with, that's what I did, was what God wants of me. His power and authority, you see, is not just to impress us and not just to inspire us. It is to move us to want His power and authority working in our life, to see that if His Word works in this way, that just like His natural laws work, so do His moral laws. And that if I submit to His governance, if I let Him rule my day and rule my life, then there's going to be an order, there's going to be a symmetry, there's going to be a progress to my life. It's going to get rid of a lot of chaos. The same way that it operated in the creating of the heavens and the earth. So every day ought to begin with, and God said, every day ought to end with, and it was so for man. There's a contrast in Genesis chapter 1 in the creation of man from everything else. We've already alluded to this contrast in terms of the sequence of things, that everything else is way down the scale for man, which said something to Israel. And in a culture, in a world where people were bowing down to things that were way beneath man, Genesis chapter 1 teaches man how everything else is beneath him but God. God is the one who is over all. And that everything else is beneath him. And so it is beneath man to bow down to things in this material world. It's a lesson to us in a culture and in a time when people maybe don't bow down to things because they give them some kind of religious significance, but they bow down to things just because of just coveting stuff, just wanting stuff. And materialism is something that's beneath man. Just thinking that the reason for our existence is to acquire things and to have things and to seek pleasure, to seek all these things that are beneath man. God has a much higher purpose for him. But there is a contrast here in the way that man is made. Everything else it says, let there be light, let there be an expanse in the heavens. Let there be stars and sun and moon. But when he comes to man in verse 26, he says, let us make. Man is different. And there's a reason for that difference. He makes everything else after its kind. The animals are to produce after its kind. The trees are to produce seed that produces new plants after its kind. But man is created, verse 27, in his own image. Man is different. God says to them, verse 28, God communicates to man, with man. And he says in verse 28 that man is to rule over. Man, being like God, being in God's image, is given a dominion. He exercises that dominion in chapter 2 when he names the creation. Language was a collaborative effort between God and man. There are some things that God named, and there's some things that man named. And isn't that beautiful? God named some things and man named some things, and now God and man use a common terminology to communicate, which says something again about man's purpose. God created man different from everything else, and that difference is to inspire us to cleave to God. That difference is to communicate to us that God wants a relationship with us. So he gave us language so that we could talk to him. He gave us language so that he could talk to us. He gave us language so that there could be communion, there could be fellowship, there could be everything that's the basics for community, the fundamentals for living in an association or fellowship with God. God wants a relationship with man. And it's the reason why man is different. It's the reason why he has the power of choice. It's the reason why he has morality. All of those things which are the consequence of being in man's in God's image. So there's a contrast in the creation of man. It's instructive to Israel. It's instructive to us about what God wants of man. One final observation before we close. And that's the theme of separation that's found all through Genesis chapter 1. It's a theme throughout Genesis, but it's a theme that we find beginning here in Genesis chapter 1. God separated things. He separated the light from the darkness. Right after He made light, He separated light and darkness. He separated the waters above from the waters below. He separated the waters below. They were separated apart for dry land to appear. Time was separated into days and months, into years. The creatures were separated after its kind. There was differentiation in all that God has made. Man was separated from everything else. Saturday was a day that was set apart. The trees in the garden were set apart when we get to Genesis chapter 2. There's a necessity in all of that for man to observe the boundaries of his habitation, which God has designed for his good. God separated things. But I want you to see that every separation God made was good for man. It's good for light and darkness to be separated. It's good for the waters above to be separated from the waters below. So that there is this canopy, and there is this atmosphere around the earth so man can breathe and so the birds can soar. It is good for there to be a place for man to live and where things grow that are able to feed man. All of these separations that God made were all boundaries that God designed. They were for man's good. It was good for there to be two trees, two different kinds of trees in the garden, and for man to observe the boundaries that God had made. You see, all of this is to inspire trust again. Every time God builds a wall, every time God says, "Don't go here," every time God defines something, it is for the good of man, just like everything else that He's made. Boundaries are good for us. There is one boundary that was not of God's creation in Genesis 1. It's a boundary, it's a separation that God did not impose, it's a separation that we added to this world. And that's the separation caused by sin. You see, when we don't trust God's boundaries, when we don't observe the things that He put in place for our good, when we don't trust, we sin. Sin, you see, is a violation of that trust relationship with God. It's not believing that He really has our best interest in mind. It's not believing that this really is good for me. It's not believing that this really is bad for me. It's not trusting what He said about that. And that's the one separation that's not found in the book of Genesis. Every other separation was with man's interest in mind. And all of that, again, is to inspire our trust in Him that kind of confidence that He has our best interest at heart and in mind. I hope as you look around today, as you look around this week, that you'll think about today. It's the day God made light, separated light from darkness. And tomorrow, as you think about your week, you'll think about what God made on Monday and on Tuesday and so on through the week. And think about how He ordered all of this to inspire our trust in Him, teach us how we ought to conduct our lives, and how we ought to live longing for a relationship with Him. Thank you so much for listening so well in this Bible study hour.